With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City Newsday. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for turning on the radio this morning. Today is Thursday, August the 3rd. Coming up in today's show, turning focus on the next farm bill. How soon do leaders hope to really start talks? We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, here's Brian German.
The San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District is currently accepting applications for their equipment replacement programs. The control district is offering funding opportunities to help offset costs to growers for the replacement of certain types of equipment. The tractor replacement program will cover up to 60% of eligible costs for replacement. Eligible equipment includes wheel loaders, balers, combines, graders, and tractors. It must be self-propelled, currently in use, and in operational condition. The Ag Pump Program offers up to 80% of eligible costs for replacing engines used to power agricultural irrigation pumps. Updating older, diesel-powered pump engines or switching to electric motors can reduce or eliminate permitting requirements. Funding will be provided on a first-come, first-served basis. Applicants will need to acquire approval by way of a signed, executed contract from the control district prior to purchasing the new equipment. More information is available at valleyair.org. I'm Brian German for AgNet West.
House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway says work on the 2018 Farm Bill will start within the next 8 weeks. Speaking during a Farm Bill listening session in his home state of Texas, Conaway told attendees that he wants to get the next Farm Bill on the House floor this year. After 3 hours of listening to farm leaders, Conaway added he wants the bill on the House floor this year because he disliked the turmoil of extensions. The 2014 Farm Bill expires on September 30, 2018. Conaway also noted that Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Pat Roberts of Kansas said last week that he would also like to write the Farm Bill in 2017. His comments come as the House Agriculture Committee holds listening sessions this week. A session is scheduled for Saturday in Modesto. AgNet West will be streaming the session on our website. Head to agnetwest.com for more information. As the Senate's August recess approaches, Democrats are looking ahead to the next policy item on their agenda, trade. Trade is one piece of the Democrats' tagline heading into the midterms, which is a better deal, better skills, better jobs, better wages. Democrats argue better trade deals will raise incomes and create more well-paying jobs for low- and middle-income Americans. At a recent Senate Ag Committee hearing, National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson stressed the importance of fair trade for the return of prosperity to the overall farm economy.
We agree that exports are very important. We are in a challenging environment right now with an administration that, while we agree with much of what he says in terms of trade philosophy, I think most of us would disagree with some of the tactics. Words matter, and the ability to lose export markets, they're pretty fragile. And when countries are offended, they look elsewhere, and we're seeing some of that. So certainly with respect to exports, I think there are some different approaches we could take. I do think it is really important that to your base question, we have a safety net that really works. And in our view, you need a safety net really in two fundamental circumstances: when market prices are bad, below cost of production, and when disaster strike. And it's, I talk about that quite a bit in my testimony, and I guess that's what I would urge the committee to really focus on.
Trade is one area in which Democrats and Mr. Trump might find some common ground. In the past, the president has urged a tougher stance on China for manipulating currency and on companies that leave the U.S. for foreign soil. Current crop conditions show few prospects for another record harvest of corn and soybeans this fall. Michael Clements has more.
Crop condition ratings for corn and soybeans are below year-ago levels, as recorded in the USDA's latest crop conditions report this week. American Farm Bureau Federation Market Intelligence Director John Newton says this year has been a challenge for growers, with excessive moisture and planting delays this spring and drought conditions in parts of the upper Midwest.
I don't think many in the trade are anticipating another record corn or soybean crop this year. USDA has yields at this point in time at 48 bushels per acre on beans and 170.7 bushels bushels per acre on corn. And I think the market's looking to the crop production report next week to get an updated expectation of what these yields just might be.
Newton says the upcoming crop production report next week could provide better market direction heading into harvest season.
At this point, I've told a lot of people to have a marketing plan in place and watch the yields that come out next week and make informed marketing decisions. I think if we see yields come down, we may even see estimates of harvested acreage start to come down. The corn supply could be a lot smaller than folks anticipate, and that could help to pull down some ending stocks, and that'd be very bullish for prices.
Newton says more data is available regarding yield expectations on the Farm Bureau Market Intel webpage.
We did an analysis looking at the probability of maybe seeing corn yields this year moving back towards trend. The long-term linear trend's 166.8 bushels per acre, and we certainly think that's a better probability of happening relative to the USDA's 170.7. So we look at the implications of seeing a corn yield at or below trend and what that may mean on the supply in 2017.
That information can be found at fb.org/market intel. Michael Clements, Washington.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take "with you" from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
What's happening below the surface can mean success or failure for your crops. New MycoApply Endomax from Valent USA Corporation is the latest innovation to help take your tree nut, tree fruit, vine, and vegetable crops to the next level. MycoApply Endomax contains a unique blend of four mycorrhizal fungi that colonizes a plant's roots to create a symbiotic root and mycelial network. Where water is limited, this enhanced network improves plant vigor by expanding the root's ability to efficiently absorb water and nutrients under variable environmental conditions. Ultimately, MycoApply Endomax helps deliver consistent plant health and overall performance to optimize yield. Plus, MycoApply Endomax is OMRI listed for organic production. Maximize your crop's potential with new MycoApply Endomax from Valent. For more information, contact your PCA or visit valent.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals. Or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle. Or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. A special insurance plan for beekeepers is expanding to cover more states. Here's Gary Crawford with more.
I made this recording of some honeybee hives when I was visiting a beekeeper in my state of Virginia. Now, if you are a beekeeper in Virginia, you have had the ability to buy a special bee-related insurance policy called the Apiculture Pilot Insurance Plan. But your beekeeper colleagues over in West Virginia and 18 other states have not had that plan available to them. Starting next crop year, the 2018 crop year, though, the program is expanding.
So now coverage is offered for the 2018 crop year in 48 states. all the contiguous states.
That's Acting USDA Risk Management Agency Administrator Heather Manzano. And no, the Apiculture Pilot Insurance, API for short, does not protect against bee diseases or the colony collapse disorder, things like that.
What this product does is it ensures those beehives against a decline in precipitation. This product is specifically focused on precipitation. So when there is a lack of precipitation that causes a shortage of the bees' ability to produce honey, that's when the insurance would kick in and provide coverage.
According to what kind of coverage you bought. In this case, though, indemnities are based on an area measure of precipitation, not your particular farm or your particular nearest weather station. It's a special grid. Manzano says this API plan began with only a few states back in 2009. Right now, in the 29 states in which the program is available, about 40% of the colonies do have the API coverage. The program's very specialized. Not everybody even knows about it, but
for those who have that knowledge of how the product works and have seen it in effect, it's become very popular. And we are still working on the education piece. And so as we broaden this to additional states, we're hoping that we will be able to educate others on the opportunities that are available through this expansion.
You can also educate yourself a little bit. You can go online to your search engine and type in
Apiculture Pilot Insurance.
I tried it. It took me to USDA's risk management website where there is some detailed information and a
decision support tool, and that aids producers in determining the appropriate coverage for their operations.
There's plenty of time to learn about the plan. Like most crop insurance, the government shares the cost of buying the insurance. Also, like most crop insurance, you buy from a private insurance agent. The USDA's Risk Management Agency website has a list of agents. The deadline to enroll in Apiculture Pilot Insurance for the 2018 crop year is November 15th. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Well, in today's livestock news, it was announced back at the end of June by Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt that the EPA had sent its repeal of the Waters of the U.S. or WOTUS rule to the Federal Register, beginning the process of ending the regulation. Now, a comment period concerning WOTUS has been opened, but it will end August 28th. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Environmental Counsel Scott Yeager has information on how cattle producers can submit comments to the EPA before that comment period ends.
We need you to submit comments. This effort is going to be successful based on the comments that the agency receives from you all out there in the countryside who would have to deal with the 2015 WOTUS rule. So what you can do is go onto NCBA's website, beefusa.org. Now, when you get there, there will be a big article right there that says file comments with EPA telling them to ditch the WOTUS rule. Press that link and that will take you to a form letter. So, and then you can copy and paste that form letter from your computer and then click the link in there, and that'll take you to regulations.org where you paste your comment and submit it to EPA. And we laid it out pretty easily. We tried to take a process that was very bureaucratic and try to make it as easy for you as possible so that you can submit comments to the agency. And basically, the form letter that we put together does a couple things. It applauds the EPA for proposing to rescind the 2015 rule, and then it offers some suggestions and advice on how to fix it. So you can take that, copy it, and paste it to the EPA. You can edit it and change it to how you need it to be for your personal operation and any concerns you want to add in. And then at the bottom of that letter, write in your name and your affiliate cattlemen's association so that you can get your word out there to the EPA and get our presence and the force of our organizations and our membership straight in front of the agency so they understand this is a concern for us. There is one more thing. They're due by August 28th. So please, I urge you, get out there, get on the Beef USA website, file your comments with the agency so that your voice can get heard in this process.
Again, that was NCBA's Environmental Counsel, Scott Yeager. To learn more, simply go to their website. That's beefusa.org. And with the fact August just started, November is getting closer and closer. And November 29th through December 1st are dates you need to put on your calendar. That's when the 2017 California Cattlemen's Association, California Cattlewomen, will hold their annual convention. This year's event will take place at the Nugget Casino Resort in Sparks, Nevada. You're invited to join them and learn more about what the association does on your behalf. By participating, you'll be taking part in policymaking process, from private property regulations to public lands grazing, animal health issues. There's a variety of topics that will be discussed. So again, that's November 29th through December 1st. To learn more, go to calcattlemen.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Where would you go if you wanted to buy some goat meat? Only place I know would be to go out and buy one and butcher it yourself. That may not appeal to you, but it might, eventually. See, demand is growing in the U.S. for goat meat. It's mostly the growing population of immigrants from other countries. You see, consumption of goat meat among ethnic groups in America is generating a lot stronger demand. Goat meat is the most widely consumed type of meat in the world. Bet you didn't know that. It's slowly finding favor among Americans because of its nutritional characteristics. Goat production in America is mostly for its milk. Goat cheese is consumed by a lot of us. Now, the meat is finding its place on the same dinner table. And research is going on at one university on the nutritional value of goat meat. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
Cindy Zimmerman has today's interview segment. Here's Cindy.
We're here at the InfoAg Conference in St. Louis. With me is Dr. Paul Fixon, who won the Legacy Award this year for the Precision Ag Awards of Excellence. And he's just recently retired from the International Plant Nutrition Institute, right, Paul?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so tell me about what you did there. Tell me about the institute and what you did there.
All right, well, thank you. Yes, the International Plant Nutrition Institute, or IPNI, is an organization whose mission is really to connect the science we know about plant nutrition with nutrient management in the field. And we're a global organization, a small organization, and so we partner extensively with academic institutions, with other nonprofit organizations, with farm groups, and the nature of which varies depending upon what part of the world you're in. And so here in North America, we work very closely with the university systems, with the commodity groups, with ARS, and in Canada with Ag Canada, and similar groups there.
How has using precision technology for plant nutrition advanced over the last couple of decades?
Well, it's made remarkable advancements in both our ability to deal with the spatial variability in soils and crops, and also in the temporal variability. We're moving closer to real-time kind of management decisions, and this has always been needed. But if you talk to any farmer, they recognize the season-to-season differences and the differences within fields when you can see how productivity changes. But it's been fairly recently that we've had the technology to do something about that and to actually manage. And we still have much to learn. There's much ahead of us, but we've made tremendous progress in the concept of managing variability. And there's great opportunity there for both financial improvement for our farmers as well as reducing environmental impact on off farms. So,
well, how much has this conference, do you think, contributed to just the technology transfer between people to advance precision agriculture?
Yes, we do believe. Of course, we're biased because we helped create this conference clear back in 1995, the first one. But its major role is to bring people together. There are so many disciplines, so many components of this approach that it's critical, even in this day where everything is virtual and we have great communication, electronic digital communication capability, still bringing people together face to face and actually being able to talk one-on-one and dream and maybe complain a little bit about the problems we haven't quite solved and listen to each other, that still has immense value, and it's always been valuable from those early days, and then I think it's just as valuable today.
Right. Back in 1995, did you even dream of some of the things that they're doing right now?
We perhaps dreamt about some of it, but we had no understanding of how actually get there. You know, and it's been truly remarkable from the days where our keynote speaker this morning, Steve Sunk, described where we knew something about this internet thing, but we really didn't have any idea how it actually worked, but figured that, you know, this could be really important to agriculture. And of course, now we use it just constantly. It's the backbone that we hang our communication capability on.
Yeah, it's amazing. Who knows what we'll be in another 20 years. So. Well, congratulations. Appreciate it. Good to see you and hear from you here at the InfoAg Conference in St. Louis. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers. But these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
This is Farm City News Day. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation anytime you want, all on our website, agnetwest.com. We'll be right back with more of the news that's important to you.
What's happening below the surface can mean success or failure for your crops. New MycoApply Endomax from Valent USA Corporation is the latest innovation to help take your tree nut, tree fruit, vine, and vegetable crops to the next level. MycoApply Endomax contains a unique blend of four mycorrhizal fungi that colonizes a plant's roots to create a symbiotic root and mycelial network. Where water is limited, this enhanced network improves plant vigor by expanding the root's ability to efficiently absorb water and nutrients under variable environmental conditions. Ultimately, MycoApply Endomax helps deliver consistent plant health and overall performance to optimize yield. Plus, MycoApply Endomax is OMRI listed for organic production. Maximize your crop's potential with new MycoApply Endomax from Valent. For more information, contact your PCA or visit valent.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals. Or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle. Or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. Harvest dust is top of mind for almond growers as they move into the harvest season. I talked with Almond Board Director for Sustainability and Environmental Affairs, Dr. Gabrielle Ludwig, to get some tips for growers.
I'm Gabrielle Ludwig, Director for Sustainability and Environmental Affairs at the Almond Board of California.
We wanted to talk about managing dust at harvest, and that should be on the minds now of almond growers, right? They should be thinking about it.
Yes. I mean, at this point in time, you either have already started harvest or you're just about ready to start harvest. So the question is making sure you're orchard floor has been prepped to minimize dust, so there's you haven't loosened it up and you've got it clean. And then now that you've started harvesting, it's a question of making sure your sweepers and your harvesters themselves are set up appropriately to minimize dust.
What kind of steps should growers be taking now? You mentioned one, making sure that the orchard floor is clean and the equipment. Yeah. Are there other steps they should be taking?
Well, I think there's a number of different steps they can take to help minimize dust, not eliminate, but minimize. One is just making sure that your sweeper heads are set up correctly and that they don't dig into the soil. Because what the research shows is if they're set a little bit too low, you loosen up the soil, and then when you do the next step, the pickup, you get a lot more dust than you would have if your sweeper had been set up correctly. So that's certainly a key one. Another one is just simply stepping back for a moment and saying, okay, where is this orchard located? Do I have roads, houses, homes, other activities going on that could be going on around that orchard? And then sort of thinking about, depending on what is there, are there things to do, especially during the last step, the pickup, which is the dustiest part, are there things there to do to minimize the potential for that dust affecting that adjacent road, et cetera? Things that you can do there is one is try and make sure you're setting it up so you're blowing inwards, not outwards. One is also just making sure that you maybe reduce some of the speeds of the settings within the pickup machine so it produces somewhat less dust for those rows. Fundamentally, the trees themselves work as filters. So if you can use the trees as filters, it's very helpful. But a lot of it is just thinking through what's around you that could be affected and then targeting especially those areas for making sure that you try and minimize the dust.
And why is it important that growers do try to minimize the dust?
There are several reasons why it's important. A large one is just simply that with the increased almond acreage, there's just a lot more almond harvesting going on, and so there's a lot more dust, and we're a lot more noticeable to friends, neighbors, others. The other one is, and again, we're not completely exaggerating here. I mean, there's cases when, because of the dust, let's say Highway 99 came to a full stop because the drivers couldn't see while that dust was passing the 99. And again, that's not how we want almonds to be seen, as something that's stopping traffic or messing up the neighbor's pools, et cetera. So a lot of it is just simply as we have more acres of almonds, we are literally more visible in multiple ways from an almond harvest perspective. And then it's also a question of it can be a nuisance, dust, in terms of the regulatory process. And then a small part of the dust is actually regulated dust, and that is PM10 and PM2.5. And again, while the San Joaquin Valley is in compliance on PM10, it's not in compliance on PM2.5. So again, anything that helps with that also helps improve the overall air quality in, especially the San Joaquin Valley, but in the Central Valley.
And I know the Almond Board has a lot of good information available to help growers with this. Can you tell us where to find that online?
Yeah, if you go to almonds.com and then click on growers and then in the orchard and then click on harvest. And there we have videos that help describe some of the things to think about. We have written materials that are also all available on the website. And so again, that's at almonds.com, click on growers, click on in the orchard, and then click on harvesting.
Can you think of anything that we've missed or anything that we should add in there?
Yes. Two other things to think about is other ways of minimizing the dust include either investing in a lower dust harvester, that's the pickup machine. So the next time your grower is considering buying a almond harvester, take a look at the lower dust emitting ones. And then there's actually currently some incentive funding from USDA NRCS for the use of a low dust harvester, because a lot of growers are using custom harvesters. Is again asking your custom harvester, do you have a low dust system. And again, initially, probably really want to use those in the more sensitive sites, but for that overall air quality aspects, trying to move in that direction is probably useful. So take a look at what's out in the marketplace and take a look at NRCS as, through the EQIP program incentive programs. There are qualifications you need to meet to do that and an application for it, but that program provides a per acre use, essentially offsets some of the cost if you use a lower dust piece of equipment.
Once again, Almond Board Director for Sustainability and Environmental Affairs, Dr. Gabrielle Ludwig. Crop and livestock producers overall experienced little or no change in what they received for their commodities from May to June. Here's Rod Bain with details.
Slight movement in the major indexes was the news from USDA's latest agricultural prices received report. As a whole, the prices farm producers received for their commodities in June were relatively unchanged from the previous month. That's despite modest increases in both the crop and livestock price indexes for the month. Crop producers in total earned 0.3% more for their commodities, most of that increase for fruit and tree nut growers and producers of other crops like hay and cotton. The prices received index for livestock rose 0.6% month over month, due mostly to a 3.6% increase in what dairy producers received price-wise in June. Meanwhile, the prices paid by producers for inputs and services in June declined by the same amount, 0.1%, as the overall prices received index. That was due to lower prices for items such as feeder pigs, hay and forages, and concentrates. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.